From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, it's the afterlife. Here's what's happening. Kennebunkport, Maine, former President George H.W. Bush, he's 91, the oldest living former U.S. president, fell at his summer home on Wednesday night, broke a bone in his neck, but was doing okay. He is in a neck brace. Again, he's 91 years old. The White House has dispatched Vice President Joe Biden to Capitol Hill to sell the Democrats on the newly announced Iran nuclear deal, as several influential members voiced some reservations about giving it their seal of approval in a vital vote this fall. It's so critical for the administration to try to get this passed, but I don't know what's going to happen. And I've got to tell you, Israel is not too happy with this situation. Dr. John Curtis, of course, heads up onlinecolumnist.com and joins us with many special reports and issues. And John, we've got a big one here. I'm not sure how this is going to end up.
Well, I think the outcome, I mean, if you really want to look into a crystal ball, it's going to pass. Because, you know, they don't have the votes needed to sustain an Obama veto. The problem with this whole thing is we're in an election cycle right now, and this is now the latest major political football that, you know, the GOP can use to discredit Obama's foreign policy. I mean, this is a two-year deal worked on with the P5 plus one. That's the U.S., U.K., France, Germany, Russia, and China. So it's an international, multinational accord that basically attempts to thwart some of the enrichment activity, nuclear enrichment activity that's going on in Iran, that's been going on for years. I mean, George, it's been 5 years since Ahmadinejad declared that Iran was a nuclear state.
Yeah.
Now, when he made that statement, you know, 5 years ago, he wasn't talking about reactor fuel or medical isotopes. He was referring to they can build a bomb. Now, the question about this agreement, you know, that is being criticized is that it doesn't stop Iran from really engaging in the kind of surreptitious kind of underground nuclear activity that everybody would like it to, because it's restricted. The IAEA, that's the, you know, UN watchdog, nuclear watchdog group out of Vienna, it's restricted them in terms of going to sensitive Iranian sites. Now, what they did in order to put this deal together, to finally close it, was they said that the IAEA can use what's called their additional protocol mechanism. And what that means is that if they suspect that there's some kind of weaponizing or military application to the program, that they can ask the Iranians at that point for additional inspections. But as we know, the Iranians are very clever. They're very good at concealing things.
They sure are. And let me tell you, John, the Israelis are not too happy about this, and most Arab countries are not too happy about this. They don't want Iran to have a nuke.
Well, no, of course they don't. But here's the deal with Iran. They're fighting a proxy war in Syria right now through their militia, which is called, it's a Lebanese-based, Beirut-based, called Hezbollah. The irony is, and no one asked Obama this at his press conference today, is who are the real boots on the ground fighting ISIS in Syria and Iraq right now? And the only boots on the ground doing that are the Kurds and, yes, Hezbollah. And this is the arch enemy, supposedly, of Israel, or one of Israel's many enemies. But let's go back just a little bit of history and realize that when the hothead Ahmadinejad, you know, the former president of Iran.
Yeah, the Holocaust denier, by the way.
Yes, when he said, you know, in 2005 that they were going to wipe Israel off the map, I mean, I think Netanyahu went apoplectic about that. He's utterly convinced that if Iran had a nuclear bomb, they would drop it on Tel Aviv. Now,
John, let me ask you this real fast, though. I mean, if you had a neighbor who every other day said, John, I'm going to blow your house up, I mean, wouldn't you take that seriously?
Well, I think you would, but I think you realize that the rhetoric that goes on in Iran, just like it does here in Israel and every other country in the world, all the saber rattling, that you have to ask yourself, is the saber rattling going to go on with or without this agreement? At least this agreement is a multinational agreement that basically attempts to slow down Iran's development of a nuclear bomb. Without this, you know, the argument of the critics is that if you allow Iran to, if you end the sanctions, you allow Iran to make the billions and billions of dollars, they're going to just funnel that into covert nuclear activity and, you know, other kinds of shenanigans that goes on in, you know, in Yemen and other parts of the world where they have their proxy terrorists that are fighting. I think that if the Congress plays this out politically, I think it could run into some resistance in the Congress. It may not pass, but Obama will veto it, and I don't believe they have the votes to sustain a veto on this thing.
We shall see what happens. Track Dr. Curtis's work by going to onlinecolumnist.com. It's part of our Twitter feed, by the way, which you should be, of course, following all the time. Controversial U.S. military training exercise known as Operation Jade Helm rolls out this week across several southwestern states, but a group of wary citizen watchdogs now will be keeping an eye on them. By the way, next week, Stephen Quayle joins me as we talk about Jade Helm. Pete Lantieri, a former Marine now living in Arizona, says volunteer members he's helped organize will be on the ground as part of a newly formed surveillance campaign called Counter Jade Helm, a product of mounting suspicions across western states over the exercise itself. The group has been set up to locate, track, and observe U.S. soldiers, Green Berets, Air Force Special Ops, Navy SEALs across the Southwest. The three-month military exercise started today. Lantieri played down the notion that the counter campaign could lead to conflict. No, we don't want that to happen, but the media, by the way, is not invited to attend. San Francisco gun stores would have to videotape all firearm and ammunition sales under a new proposal being considered by city officials. Aside from requiring videotaped gun sales, the bill would require sales records to be sent to the San Francisco Police Department. Well, if you drink a lot of sugary drinks, doctors say that's not good. And if you live in Britain, listen to this. An extra 20% tax on sugary drinks should be introduced to tackle what they believe the obesity crisis. It estimates that poor diets are caused about 70,000 premature deaths each year just out there in the United Kingdom. And the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is calling on drug makers of some popular painkillers to strengthen their warning labels after a review of new safety information. The warning labels on non-aspirin, non-steroid, anti-inflammatory drugs must be updated to identify an increased risk of a heart attack or stroke. They are typically given to relieve pain or fever that results from, but not limited to, arthritis, flu, headaches, cramps. Higher doses require a prescription. Lower doses are available over the counter. The warning applies to both. Some of the brands include Celebrex, Advil, Aleve, Dapro, Naprosyn, just to name a few. Bottom line, you take medicine like this, be careful, please. Don't overdo it. NASA has just released its first close-up images of the area of Pluto's equator, which contains a range of mountains rising as high as 11,000 feet above the dwarf planet's icy surface. We've got pictures of that for you at coasttocoastam.com. New Horizons principal investigator Alan Stern compared the range to the Rocky Mountains, adding that they provide clues about the dwarf planet's geology. The steep topography means that the bedrock that made these mountains, they believe, must be of water ice. Let's check in with our science advisor and head, of course, of his website, BehindTheBlack.com, Robert Zimmerman. Amazing pictures, Robert.
Yeah, there's only a taste, George. We've only really seen, they only showed really three pictures today at the press conference. One was of Charon, and that was also interesting, just like the one picture close-up they showed from Pluto. Both showed that these objects are still geologically or
in terms of atmosphere, meteorologically active. And that is not something they expected. They really expected that because there's no giant planet around them to tidally heat them, that they would be like the moon, somewhat dead worlds. And their surfaces are being repaved, either from atmospheric effects or from geology underground. And that was not expected. That throws all planetary geology into an uproar. They don't know how to fix it, and they're going to have to start over. This is only the beginning, George. Tomorrow, more pictures. Friday, more pictures. And on to the they have like several, they must have several hundred pictures to download, and they only can get them a few at a time.
And we'll see as many as we can at coasttocoastam.com. Robert, thank you so much. Did you ever see that black and white Dracula film called Nosferatu? It was with that hideous looking Dracula. I mean, hideous. Well, the skull of F.W. Murnau, the director of that 1920 silent vampire classic, Nosferatu, has been removed from his grave. The theft from the cemetery outside of Berlin is thought to have taken place a few weeks ago. It is not known whether the grave, which sits beside those of his two brothers, was targeted specifically. His best-known films, of course, the 1922's Nosferatu, which was an unauthorized adaption of the Dracula story starring Max Schreck as the vampire Count Orlok. Federal Reserve Chairperson Janet Yellen says the U.S. Central Bank remains on track to raise interest rates this year. With labor markets expected to steadily improve and turmoil abroad unlikely to throw the U.S. economy off the track. Stand by, folks. In a couple hours, you will have for us, we will have Gerald Celente with us. Trends 2000, one of his books. He's an expert on trends, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Gerald Celente, of course, founder, director of the Trends Research Institute. He's the number one trend analyst, I believe, in the country. Gerald has forecasted the dot-com meltdown, the 1997 Asian currency crisis, a stock market crash back in 1987, and he has also looked at terrorism against America, and here he is for a couple hours on Coast to Coast. Gerald, I'm looking forward to this tonight with you. How are you, my friend?
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. I'm doing wonderful.
We've got you on the East Coast in the wee hours, don't we?
Yeah. Actually, I just came back from Europe. I was at the Milano Expo, and every 5 years, you know, countries have expos, and it wasn't much really at all. It was supposed to be about feeding the planet. And it was brought to you by McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and others.
I love
it's
that.
Like going to Playland.
I love that.
And then I went down through Slovenia, down through Croatia, and it was very beautiful over there.
Gerald, Janet Yellen is just talking about raising interest rates. That would be the first time in years. Is that going to happen?
You know, they keep saying it's going to happen, and it never happens. And she, as you point out today in her appearance before Congress, that regardless of what's going on in the world, the United States is going to raise interest rates because there's a recovery. So I don't know what recovery she's looking at. Because what didn't make the news is that the White House just downgraded GDP growth for 2015. They said it would grow at a 3% rate this year, and now they've downgraded it to 2%.
Oh, geez.
And by the
way,
that's been since the panic of 08 hit. We've only looked at, you know, every year on average, it's only about 2.2%.
Yeah.
And then you saw the retail numbers that came out earlier in the week, and they were down. And they can't blame that on the snow.
Do you think
they did
that in the winter? That's right. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, people, well, one, I think retail's in trouble. I think the internet is just nipping away at those sales. I spend some time online, Gerald. You know, it's convenient. If you don't need something today, you just sit online and order it. It gets delivered. It's right there at your doorstep, and off you go.
Well, that's true. And then there's the other part of it. And that's the jobs. They don't pay much money. And when you look at median household income in the United States, it's below 1999 levels. And then you have that whole, you know, issue of college debt. What is it, about $1.2 trillion now? And so you just keep adding things up, and people are, they don't have the dough to spend like they used to. So between the internet and no net income, we're seeing a slowdown. And it's not only the United States. So will they raise interest rates? To answer your question, I believe they're going to have to at some point. This is unprecedented in world history, part one and part two. What is this? We're going on, what, 93 months of zero interest rate policy?
It's amazing.
And who is this hurting? It's hurting the everyday person. Because once upon a time when we were young guys, they used to have a thing called savings accounts. Remember those things?
Huh? I remember having a CD back in 1988. I got 8% on that. 8%. Those days are gone, aren't they?
They're gone. Now, you know, there's countries in Europe where they have negative interest rates. You have to pay them to keep the money in the bank. I'm not making that up.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you remember when they issued this year? You know, I'll tell you what, George, you're a nice guy. I have a 10-year Swiss bond over here. You pay me now, and when you cash it in 10 years, you're going to get less than what you paid me. We'll call it a negative yield.
Yeah, exactly. But it'll be safe, and we will give some of it back to you. Hey, what do you think about this Greece situation, Gerald?
Hey, you know, right now they're out in the streets. You know, I have to tell you, I'm very disappointed for a number of reasons, but one of them being that, you know, just what, a little over a week ago, they called a referendum, and the people voted, you know.
They didn't like it.
61% of them voted against what the Troika was giving them.
That's right.
They voted against the referendum. And now, and I'm not making this up, the deal that they're pushing through is worse than the one that the people voted against. And those, you know, those are words coming right out of the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times. Here's the quote from the Wall Street Journal. The July 5th referendum ended with a resounding no to the measures, despite a large majority of Greeks wanting to stay in the currency union. The measures laid out in Sunday's statement go beyond those rejected in last week's vote.
You know, here we are, you know, thousands of miles away from Greece. So I get emails every day, Gerald, from people saying, who cares what's going on over there? Is that a legitimate statement, or should we care about what's happening to Greece?
Well, it's, you know, again, who cares what goes on in other countries? But when you look at it as we do, as global trend forecasters, I'll tell you what the big story is over here. The cradle of democracy, they just got taken over by a foreign countries. And again, I'm not making that up either. You know, you could read the Financial Times, even in their editorials, they're saying this, that they've given up their sovereign rights. So now, because they joined the Euro group, they're told what they could do with labor issues,
mm-hmm.
what they could do, what they're selling off, what kind of restrictions they used to have for whether it's bakeries and not letting international companies come in to take over different things. So they've lost their sovereignty. So I think it's a huge issue in terms of how many other countries are in the Euro group, and now you're going to see. You think Poland is going to want to join the Euro group? You think the Czech Republic or Hungary are going to want to? So people are going to start thinking twice about this in other countries, and the issue becomes a destabilization issue, because all of a sudden the Greek problem's not going to go away with these measures that are put in place. Matter of fact, even the IMF came out and said that they were too harsh and they should have had some debt forgiveness in there. Things are only going to get worse. And then you see the spill-off starts to happen. What's going to happen in Italy? What's going to happen in Spain? What's going to happen in Portugal? Are people going to start rebelling against the euro group? And if they do, you take into consideration all the other destabilization going on in world markets, it could be the kind of thing that makes bad things a lot worse.
We're going to talk about Iran and so many other things with Gerald Celente. He will look at these trends for us, important for us to really understand what's going on. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking future trends with Gerald Celente. He's the one who knows all about those trends. And next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Gerald. And welcome back to Coast, Gerald Celente with us. Gerald, I don't want war. You don't want war. But I got to tell you, I have a bad feeling about this Iranian nuke situation. I really do. How about you?
Well, I really don't. And I'll tell you why.
All right, go ahead.
Ironically, just a week ago, President Obama met with Vietnamese Communist Party leader at the White House.
Yes, almost unprecedented.
And what were they talking about? Strengthening economic ties. And I'm not a fan, by the way, of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the little bit that I know about it, because we the people are not allowed to read it, only the stuff that's being leaked.
Amazing.
And you know, in we have, of course, this was going to be the president that was going to give us transparency, you know. So, but that's what they were meeting about, and other trade deals. And then you go back, you know, 50 years ago, and there was the Vietnam War. And now we're doing business with them.
Yeah.
Look what's going on with Cuba. All of a sudden, tourism over there has increased 15% already in the first 5 months of this year, because they're trying to normalize relationships. You go to the FARS news agency as we speak now, which is the Iranian news agency. Here's the headline. Iran readying for investment flooding after nuclear agreement. This is about business. So what are the two alternatives? To keep fighting a war or to try to do business? You know, there, we posted on our site, and we do trends in the news each night, the entire agreement. And we've read a lot of it. You know, I'll be honest, I haven't read all 159 pages.
Nor have any of our legislators, so you're ahead of the game.
And a lot of these restrictions are pretty tight on Iran. I mean, they have, for example, yeah, can they be doing things surreptitiously? Of course they can.
Yes.
Yeah, nobody knows everything that they're doing, but they have to eliminate more than 95% of its stockpile of enriched uranium. And it has to remove the core of its reactor at its Arak heavy water nuclear plant. And we're reading this stuff, and this, you know, again, I'm not an expert in this, but from what I'm reading and from what I'm learning, the conditions are pretty stringent in a lot of ways. Will they have opportunities again to do things that we don't know? Of course. You know, you never know what everybody's doing, whether it's, you know, your partner or anybody. You know, things could be going on. But again, when you look at the opportunities for peace compared to war, there's a study, ironically, also that just came out a month ago from the RAND Corporation, hardly what anyone would call a left-wing group. And they said, for example, a two-state peace treaty between Israel and Palestine would boost the Israeli economy by more than $120 billion and $50 billion for the Palestinians. If they don't do it, over the term, it's going to cost, the same term, $250 billion in lost economic opportunities for Israel and a 46% per capita gross domestic product fall for Palestinians. So let's put the whole thing together and tie it together. We were talking before about Greece, and we're seeing what's going down, the economic slowdown in America. You could go to the news and you could see that both the IMF and the World Bank, I just mentioned the United States, everyone is downgrading growth for the economy. Matter of fact, the IMF growth number is now back to 2009. And we all know how bad it was back then. So what I believe what's pushing a lot of this is a desire for more business. Because you can name the country, China, oh, it's beautiful what's going on over there, particularly if you're in the stock market. Again, Puerto Rico, $73 billion worth of bonds that they can't pay off. Greece is collapsed, and there's no way out of this. So I believe when you start putting all these pieces together, it's more about bringing business than trying to keep things going the way they are.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think business drives and fuels this. Look what China has been doing in this country. It's all about business. But there's so much hate out there, Gerald, and that's what concerns me. And I don't know how to put my finger on that because I just think like the North Korean guy. I mean, there's just a lot of crazy people out there.
Yeah, but again, you know, look what they do, how they also build fear and hysteria. Did you have a happy 4th of July or were you hunting for ISIS in the woods? I mean, look how they freaked us out with that thing. And that was the 40th time they've done that, warning us of a holiday that terror might strike. So you're right, there is a lot of hate out there. And a lot of it comes, you know, in a lot of different ways to keep. Again, you know, I talked about, Vietnam. You know, here's a quote. Actually, from March of 1964, we seek an independent, non-communist South Vietnam. Unless we can achieve this objective, almost all of Southeast Asia will probably fall under communist dominance. That was Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara.
Yeah.
And you mentioned China. We're taught to hate people because of other issues going on that we really don't have a lot of knowledge about, but there are agendas that we also don't know about. So to me, you know, we're holding, by the way, here in Kingston, New York, Colonial Kingston. It's the we have the most historic four corners in America, the only place on each corner where there are pre-Revolutionary War stone buildings. And on September 20th, we're holding Occupy Peace. And I'm no pacifist. I'm a close combat practitioner. I have been for almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll attack the attacker. You know, anybody tries to kill me, I'll kill them first. So I'm not a pacifist. But with peace comes prosperity. And that's what this issue is about that we're trying to push forward. And you talked about all the hate out there. Enough already. You know, for me, you know, I want this country is a very different country than the one that I grew up in, where it was the land of opportunity. So we're saying is, you know, if you're going to go to war, how about letting Congress vote on it for a change? Because they haven't since what? World War II?
Exactly.
They've only given the president the power. So that's what this is about. It's about securing the borders, sealing the borders, and honoring the founding fathers, beginning with George Washington. No foreign entanglements. And the world was at war back then. Franklin, Jefferson, Madison, every one of them. No foreign entanglements, and that's what we're talking about. Rebuild America. We have our own problems. So I get a kick out of these politicians. They're going to fix what's going on in Syria, what's going on in Yemen, what's going on in Sudan. Hey, how about fixing Detroit first? Can we start there? Oh,
that's right.
Go to Camden. You've been to Trenton lately? How about East St. Louis? A lovely day in Ferguson. So that's what we're doing. We want to bring this country back to where it was.
So we've been watching this New Horizons spacecraft sending back incredible pictures of Pluto. The mission cost $720 million. Now, I've always been a space advocate. I love space. I love what we did when we went to the moon. I think we should have continued. Neither here nor there, we spent $720 million, Gerald, to get that craft made to Pluto and the results of it getting the information back. Is that worth it in your mind, or should we have taken that money, $720 million, spend it on infrastructure, something?
Well, to me, that's chump change compared to let's take those F-35s that can't fly very well. Yeah. They're talking into the trillions, a $13 billion aircraft. Hey, George, how about the $35 billion we're spending a year in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
And that number is now up to what, $800 billion?
Putting us deeper and deeper in debt.
And it's the longest war in American history. And Obama said that they were going to cut the troop strength in half this year, and then he backtracked again. You know, so to me, I'm only speaking for myself. You know, I'm not proselytizing and telling the motto of the Trends Journal, taught to me by my dear father, may his soul rest in peace, when I was a little boy. Anytime I'd say something and saying the same thing everyone else was saying, he'd say to me in Italian, Papagallo, parrot, stop repeating what everyone else is saying and think for yourself.
Parrot.
I heard that about five times, so I got the message.
Well, you look at the trends.
So what I'm saying, this is the way we see it, in that we have to rebuild this nation rather than trying to build other nations. It's a failure everywhere. It's a failure in Iraq. It's a failure in Syria. And how about Libya? Look what they did to Libya. If you were to ask me, what is the top trend that we see that no one's talking about that's going to have the greatest implications? I just told you I got back from Europe.
Yeah.
It's migration. When Gaddafi was in power, they weren't flooding through Tripoli into Italy. And now with him out of power, the whole place is destabilized. That humanitarian mission that we had no business doing, that has now created the conditions for the ISIS and the other militants that Gaddafi was saying he was keeping in check. When he was in power, he was keeping the migrants from flowing into Europe. Now they're flowing out of Sudan, out of Somalia, out of Central Africa, out of Mali, since the French went in there. It's out of Eritrea, out of Yemen, out of Afghanistan, throughout Europe. Here's a number to consider. It took 100,000 years to put to 1900, 100,000 years ago to 1900, to put 1.6 billion people on the planet. In 100 years, we now have 7.2 billion.
Yep, and it's going to 11.
And it's going to 11. So where are all these people going to go? And so now when you're looking at all this economic downdrift, all this military destabilization, you have some real problems out there.
What do you see, Gerald, for individuals, little trends that they can look at to better their own lives, to better their futures? Investments in precious metals, building a little business. What do you see out there?
On the business front, one of the biggest hidden trends that no one's talking about, and we're writing a lot about and doing a lot with it, is artful aging. Now, just consider, the baby boomers aren't babies no more. I mean, we're going to be turning 70 years old.
We're getting old.
We're getting old. And so is the planet. And aging gracefully, but not only that, what are the differences? What are the exercises? What are the food regimes? What are the ways to develop as you continue to age? Because it's not a negative only. There used to be a thing once upon a time. They used to honor the elders. You've been on the planet a long time. We used to say in the Bronx, BS has its own sound. And when you're around long enough, you know what it sounds like. And so what we're saying is that, people keep saying we're talking about the issues going on in the world, the negatives, and what can be done to change them. And people say, the young people. What young people? When I was young, what did I know when I was young? I didn't know anything. As you start going older and keep learning more, if you keep learning. So it's
I think younger kids, too, now, Gerald, were smarter than we were.
They want to say that, but are they really?
I think
your kid's a kid. You only know so much when you're young. You know, we were talking about the Vietnam War. But what did I know at 19 years old? All I thought about was girls' sports, and I wanted to open up a delicatessen in the Bronx, you know.
It's called, call it Jerry's Place, right?
And, you know, so what I'm saying is that this aging is big. Because here's the thing. You've heard this. We've all heard it. How many people have taken jobs and done things in their lives because of security?
Many.
Not because of their passion that wanted to do it.
Many. Many, many, many took it, and many are still in it, and they feel like they're in a rut.
Exactly. So now you're getting into your later years. You could finally become who you are. We did a whole piece. It's on our website, trendsresearch.com. If you go to the conference page, I forgot the name of it. But we have Stanley Blum.
Okay.
Stanley Blum and June Blum. They're 95 years old. And Stanley has just written, it's Trends TV, that's the link. He's just written his fourth book and got it published. He began painting at 80 years old.
I love it.
He's a shoe salesman.
I love it.
And this is what, you look at this video. They're dancing. They're alive. So what we're saying, if you want to look at a good business, this is one to get into. The other one, and we've been saying this forever, and it's only going to continue to grow. Clean food and water. I talked about the population numbers. Aren't you happy you don't have to live in California? You want to talk about water? Clean food, shortages of food, and whole health healing are the big entrepreneurial opportunities that you could do in a small way and make big profits. On the gold end, of which I've been in gold for, you know, my first buy of gold was in 1978, the people ask me, how come the prices aren't going up? And I don't give investment advice, but as a forecaster, I don't know why. They should be going up with all this turmoil.
They should be. Silver should be through the roof by now.
Exactly. Because you're seeing all of this printed money, and it's just cheap dough that's fueling the economy. Everybody knows that. So for me, what is the downside of gold? Maybe another $100, because it costs more than that if it gets down to $1,100 to pull it out of the ground. But what's the upside? When we put together all of what's going on, the instability, particularly in the markets, and the China market's a big one to watch, because the housing bubble has crashed and they soaked people into buying stocks. It's a replay of 1929. It's only a different language. When this thing hits, when gold prices go up, we are forecasting they're going to spike up. They're not going to go up slowly. And we believe they're going to go over $2,000 an ounce.
Wow. Will silver ride with that too? And yes. When would it happen?
So, again, the timing is difficult because of the schemes undreamed of. For example, let's go back to China. The market crashed. It went down 30%. What did they do? They played games like nobody's. I'll tell you what, George, you have a lot of ownership in those shares of stock. You can't sell them for 6 months. Oh, and you want to short the markets? You're not allowed to. If you do, you're going to go to jail.
Wow.
I'm not making this up. They pumped in billions and billions of dollars. They're taking pension fund money and buying stocks. They stopped the sale of almost 50% of the grade A stock shares. They weren't allowed to sell them. Now it's only about a third that they still can't sell. So what I'm saying is, we talked earlier about 0% interest rates. There's a thing called quantitative easing. Who made this stuff up? If things went in a normal cycle where prices are supposed to be reflective of true market conditions, gold should be at 4,000. But
you're right.
The game is rigged.
You're absolutely right, but they can't keep rigging it. Eventually it's going to catch up with them, isn't it?
Exactly. If Ponzi gets caught sometime or another,
Good
and
point.
Ponzi is going on right now, but I don't know the Chinese name for it. And it's going on in Europe with their quantitative easing. It's going on with the 0% interest rates. At some point, you know, people say to me, what should I do? Should I really prepare for the worst? And what I say to them, look, if you prepare for the worst and the worst doesn't happen, what did you lose? Nothing. But if you don't prepare for the worst and the worst happens, what happens? You lose everything.
We're coming back with phone calls. Get ready to make the calls with Gerald Celente on Coast to Coast AM.